Star Wars Self-Saving System. Part of the Podfic Pensive Project 2023. Recreated by Litra. A fusion between Star Wars prequels and the Scum Villain Self-Saving System series. With the pairing Obi-Wan Kenobi, Anakin Skywalker, Jar Jar Binks Fox, and Padme Amidala, various other Jedi. Summary. Shenkuin Q gets transmigrated into his favorite media. Chaos ensues. The Last Jedi had come out at midnight, and he was sitting there in his hospital bed a full 12 hours after the fact without having seen it. Shenkuin Q had known this would be the case. He spent more time in the hospital than out of it. He knew all the nurses by name and could get down to the vending machines and the bathroom in the dark better than he could in his parents' house. But this? The Last Jedi? A movie that would help shape a new generation and fuel debates for decades was far more important. Shenkuin Q spent half of his waking hours on the internet. He'd read every expansion novel ever published, including the ones for toddlers. He'd watched each of the movies dozens of times, sometimes frame by frame to be sure of each little detail. He was a true fan, and would quickly correct anyone who said that Shenkuin Ha's work was not the finest piece of fiction ever created. Not that it was perfect. There were far too many fingers in the pie for that. He'd had more than one argument about jumping sharks and how a good story was written, and that's not even getting into the war against the Trekkies. All that was to say that he was going to see this movie. It didn't matter that he was bedridden. He had access to the internet. Someone, somewhere, had to have uploaded a bootleg copy. He'd go see it in theaters as soon as he was released, and buy at least three copies when it came out, so it wasn't like he wasn't going to support the creators or anything. He just needed to head off anyone who got ridiculously wrong ideas into their heads before those ideas turned into fanon. And fake fans started shipping the wrong characters. 2 hours later, Shenkuin Q gripped the sides of his laptop. No. They had gone too far. Holdo? Force dyads? As if erasing the whole of the EU wasn't enough. They had to go and shove their asses in it? Look at what they'd done to Luke's character. And then, to bring back Palpatine? To retroactively erase all of the work of the original trilogy, the original and greatest, the story that had started it all. How dare they? His heart was pounding in his chest. The walls were swaying, but that didn't matter. Shenkuin Q could only focus on the screen in front of him, IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes and the torrent site all taking up space beside the rolling credits. Rage had taken over, replacing his blood with fire. He barely noticed when his chest throbbed and a beeping started in the distance. A voice, strangely close and overly cheerful, spoke beside him. Transmigration qualification accepted. Welcome to the Scum Series Self-Saving System. You will be placed shortly. Please do your best, and thank you for helping to improve these stories for everyone. That was about when the world went black. Shenkuin Q was sitting in a garden. It was a nice garden. There was a fountain on one wall and tall flowers that overhung the space, making him feel like he was the only person left in the world. The white stone bench he was sitting on was surprisingly comfortable. In fact, he wasn't hurting. Well, he was, but it was old and distant, more the ache of a harsh workout than years of built-up cancer treatments. He was wearing a robe, not a hospital gown or a bathrobe, but something with layers. Dark brown on tan with intricate stitching on the hems. It looked familiar, but before he could place it, a little robot... No, a droid rolled up to him, and beeped. Shangqing Q blinked. He'd seen some really good droids built by the fan community, but this took the cake. It wasn't a model he recognized, but it was similar enough to be a cousin to R2-D2. It noted that he was paying attention and extended several arms, setting up a small circular disc on legs. When it was finished, it beeped again. Shangqing Q nodded. He wasn't sure what else to do. The droid did something to the table before turning and going about its next task. Shangqing Q would have watched it, but a figure appeared in a halo of blue light. Mace Windu. Mace fucking Windu was sitting in his council chair and studying Shangqing Q through the holo. Because that's what it had to be. He was looking at a holo of a Jedi Master. Not Samuel L. Jackson, but younger and fitter and wearing Jedi robes and leaning forward to speak when Shangqing Q snapped his attention back to the present. Obi-Wan, we've received your report. The council is sorry to hear about your master. Qui-Gon Jinn will be missed. Shangqing Q nodded deeply, mind racing over the information he'd just been given. If Qui-Gon had just died, it was the end of a Phantom Menace. Mace fucking Windu had called him Obi-Wan. And who was he to contradict the Grand Master of the Jedi Order? Which meant he, or at least the person who had been in his body until half an hour ago, had recently defeated the only Sith to be identified in the last 100 or more years, and also helped save Naboo. Was this before or after the parade? Where was Anakin? Where was Palpatine? Shangqing Q opened his mouth to ask when a box popped into existence in front of his eyes.
Welcome to the Scum Series Self-Saving System. This system is in place to improve stories of all types. Due to your knowledge and passion, you have been placed in
Star Wars.
Please be aware that until you have been fully integrated into the system, you will be given the assistance of the OOC protocol. This protocol will guide and assist you in earning plot points and character approval points. Points may be used to enhance and unlock story elements, but be warned, should you ever drop to
zero
points, you will be removed from the self-saving system. Please go out and do your best.
Well, this was going to make things harder. Shangqing Q glanced at Windu, who was now looking at him with one eyebrow raised. Clearly, the Master Jedi couldn't see the message, and he'd probably been silent for too long.
Thank you, Master Windu.
The Grand Master studied him for a minute more before moving on.
We had a few questions about your report.
Shangqing Q nodded. He didn't know how to use the Force or how to wield a lightsaber, but questions he could handle.
The Darksider you fought.
Sith. Master Windu seemed surprised at the interruption.
Excuse me?
Sith. The Sith Apprentice, to be exact. The Master... Another pop-up appeared in front of him, red warning lights flashing.
Warning, OOC protocol triggered. Revealing information unknown to the character will result in a loss of 100 plot points.
The Master is still out there, Shangqing Q finished. Better not to lose any points going in, especially since he hadn't been told how many points he started with.
You're certain?
Windu asked the question like he was trying to give a way out, but Shangqing Q held fast.
I am. The Sith was well-trained. I've fought other Darksiders.
If the novels were any indication, Obi-Wan had fought at least 4 Dark Jedi.
This fighter was stronger than any other I've faced. He felt different from someone who had simply fallen from the light. And he bore no traces of Dathomir magic, the Mikosa Order, or a Tund apostate. He was a Sith.
That is concerning, and will require further investigation.
Windu gestured to someone out of frame, possibly another counselor, before returning his attention to Shangqing Q.
The other matter is that of the boy. It has been decided that he will be placed with a suitable foster family in the Republic and...
No, Shangqingqiu interrupted again.
When Mace fucking Windu glared at him, he wanted to grovel. But that wasn't how the story went. He had to make them believe it. All those arguments on the internet would be for nothing if he couldn't make his point here and now.
I will take Anakin Skywalker as my Padawan. In his final moments, I promised Master Qui-Gon Jinn I would train him. And even if I had not, turning him away from the temple now would be the same as throwing him to the Sith. The Council cannot deny that he is powerful. There is no chance that the Sith Master has not learned of him after his part in saving Naboo.
You have not been knighted, Padawan Kenobi. You cannot take a Padawan of your own.
Internally, Shangqingqiu cheered. By not blocking his initial arguments, they had basically admitted he was right.
I defeated a Sith in combat. Records going back to before the last Sith War have that as one of the ways to prove yourself. Qui-Gon himself said that I was ready for my trials when he last stood before you. Of all the tests, what could be more harrowing than facing a manifestation of the darkness and losing your master in one stroke?
Master Windu wasn't going to admit defeat easily.
Yoda and Yaddle both put in their own arguments from the sidelines. In the end, he got his way. Even if the Council didn't like it, the system awarded him 50 plot points, which was good enough for him.
Shangqingqiu held himself with the poise and solemnity he'd always pictured of the Jedi. Standing at the head of the parade wasn't exciting compared to the last week, but it was important to the appearance of things.
OOC limit unlocked. You are now free to go and explore the galaxy as a Jedi Knight.
Well, that figured. Here he was with the protagonist, an adorably innocent protagonist who had gone through so much already and yet still looked at him with hope and trust. Standing beside him, and the system said to just go and explore? Yeah, right. He remembered how Mustafar was going to go. He knew there was a war coming. He was going to spend every spare moment in the next 10 years practicing with his saber. The Gungan procession came closer. Boss Nass got down off his mount, robes swirling around him. He and the honor guard around him climbed the stairs with a solemnity that matched the proceedings. Anakin tried not to fidget. Maybe Obi-Wan should get him a fidget toy. He seemed like the kind of kid who would need one. Jar Jar moved to stand beside him as the leader of the two nations faced each other. Padme, dressed in white with pearls sewn into her headdress, turned and lifted the orb, passing it to Boss Nass. Boss Nass lifted the orb to the watching crowd and cried,
"Peace!"
to roaring applause.
Conditions met. Peace on Naboo. The egg of the dragon, mistakenly stolen long ago, has been returned to the Gungans. This ends the long feud between the people of Naboo and the native Gungan population. Plus 100 reputation points. Plus 100 plot points. Plus 500 MC satisfaction points.
Huh, I knew that thing wasn't just a glowing ball. Those idiots on Reddit wouldn't know symbolism if it hit them in the face.
Obi-Wan couldn't help but mutter under his breath. It wasn't like the crowd could hear him over the cheering anyway. There was a movement beside him, Jar Jar shifting. Then the Gungan dipped his head and said,
"They were not wrong about it being an egg, though."
Obi-Wan froze in place. Jar Jar knew about Reddit? That asshole! He knew Jar Jar had been too subdued. A few of his mutterings flitted through Obi-Wan's mind. He turned and fixed a glare on Jar Jar.
"Airplane shooting towards the sky."
He said it with all the refinement of a Jedi Master and all the fury of a frustrated fan. Jar Jar tilted his head. His eyes scanned Obi-Wan's face, and he hunched, ducking his head.
"When this is over, the two of us are going to have a talk."
Obi-Wan folded his hands in his sleeves, fixing his eyes on a point in the middle distance.
He pulled up his mental list of all the complaints and plot holes he'd ever found for this wonderful, terrible series, and started reordering them in light of the current situation.
The ship was headed back to Coruscant. It would be a few days before they reached the temple. Anakin was safe and secure in his bunk, under an extra blanket and Obi-Wan's cloak. He was adorable, especially when curled up like that. Obi-Wan had time, which meant he was going to meditate. Shangqing Q wasn't unfamiliar with meditation. He'd spent a good portion of his life in a hospital where fighting off boredom was a way of life. Plus, every Star Wars fan tried meditation at some point, just to see if they would be that one in a billion person to actually feel something like the Force. He sat in the expected cross-legged pose and focused his mind on what he knew. Point. He was living the life of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Point. There was a system in place, not the Force, that wanted to keep things on track, at least to a certain extent. Point. He could change things if he was careful and subtle about it. Point. He was not the only person to be transmigrated into this world. Point. Jar Jar Binks was actually Shangqing Ha, the author of the series. Point. Shangqing Ha had admitted to losing the original draft of the prequels due to a computer crash and scribbling out a replacement draft in a 3-day haze of coffee and energy drinks. Point. The producers and the studios had further mangled the scripts. Point. Shangqing Ha didn't know if this universe would follow the original path or the published path. Point. Shangqing Ha still had vast knowledge of people, places, and events, but couldn't seem to organize that information in any way that made sense to Shangqing Q. Point. If he was going to survive the next 10 years, the Clone Wars, and Order 66, he would need to be the greatest Jedi to ever live. Point. Lucky, then, that he had knowledge of what was coming. A small feeling tapped him on the shoulder, not unlike someone clearing their throat. Shangqing Q let his eyes drift open, but it was still just him and the sleeping Anakin in the small room. A feeling of fond exasperation pressed against him. His heart missed a beat. The feeling drifted away, and Shangqing Q refocused on his breathing, calming his pulse and mind. The feeling returned, wrapping him in the soft light of the Force. It was so much more than he had ever imagined. Palpatine. Chancellor Palpatine. The title fit, at least for the moment. It was a good solid stepping stone towards what he was truly building. It had cost him Maul, which was a pity, but all the other pieces were in place, or soon would be. In addition, he'd found Anakin. So young, so trusting, so much potential. He would make a fine apprentice. Far better than Dooku, even if it would take longer to shape him. Pity that he didn't seem to want to reach out to the kind, fatherly presence that Sidious presented. At first he thought there might be something between the boy and Queen Amidala. That would have been useful. He could have easily acted as a go-between, keeping the secret and acting as a confidant. They were friendly, but there didn't seem to be anything more. Instead, the boy clung to his new master, always looking to him for approval, offering up small victories. Obi-Wan was young. He'd lost his master, and seemed to be acting off, according to his fellows. It was to be expected, considering the ordeal he'd been through. Yes, grief was a powerful motivator. The way to the boy would be through his master. And perhaps
Obi-Wan could be used as well. Wheels within wheels. The Sith sat at the center of the known galaxy and planned. Obi-Wan carefully smoothed Bacta over the bruise on Anakin's jaw. The other masters had already given the group of Padawans, including Anakin, enough of a reprimand for fighting.
They said I cheated, Anakin sniffed.
They said I'd never be a real Jedi. They said the only reason I was here was because Master Qui-Gon said I was special, but he's dead, so he must have been wrong.
Obi-Wan pulled Anakin close, making sure to meet his eyes. Master Qui-Gon was not wrong. You did not cheat to get here. You will be a magnificent Jedi one day. Even putting all that aside, I chose you, Anakin. I will always choose you. I don't care what anyone else thinks. You are the chosen one for me. Anakin's eyes glittered.
You're not just saying that because Master Qui-Gon made you promise?
No. The promise was important, but you are far more than one promise. You're my Padawan, even when you let people pull you into fights.
Anakin ducked his head, looking up through his bangs with big eyes. Obi-Wan couldn't help but smile.
Sometime I should tell you about Brooke Chun and all the trouble he got me into. But for now, you do have to apologize, all right?
Anakin nodded, pressing into Obi-Wan's side.
Teacher Obi-Wan was the best. When they got back to the temple, he sat down with him and asked Anakin to call him teacher, not master, and explained everything. Then he set up a special comm just so Anakin could talk to his mom and Padme whenever he wanted. Teacher Obi-Wan turned the heat up whenever he got too cold, and even gave him his cloak when they were off-planet. He never scolded Anakin for taking apart mouse droids, or sneaking out to watch the races in the lower levels, only asking that Anakin let him know where he was going and who he was with so he'd be safe. Teacher Obi-Wan ignored the council, and instead of taking him to Ilum to get his first crystal, he brought him back to Tatooine, explaining about Tatooine emeralds and the crate dragon hearts that could serve the same function. Then they got to be there for his mom's wedding! Obi-Wan talked to his mom and gave her money and assured her that she didn't have to stay with a man who had freed her if she didn't want to, but she was happy and Anakin got siblings! He added their numbers to his comm and called them every week when he wasn't on a mission. Teacher Obi-Wan was different from other Jedi. Anakin knew he was young to be a master, young to take a Padawan, but it was more than that. Anakin never said he had visions, but he knew things. He knew about outbound flight before things went bad. He knew when one of the counselors was going to step down. Obi-Wan talked to Anakin when nobody else would. He listened even when the other Padawans said his ideas were stupid. Other masters scoffed at him for being the chosen one or demanded more than he could give, but never teacher Obi-Wan. There were things that he didn't like or didn't understand. Why he had to see a mind healer. Why the Jedi had to be separate from everything. Why he couldn't keep the R1 droid. Please, Obi-Wan, he'll take care of it and charge it every day. Obi-Wan gave amazing hugs. So warm, like the whole world was okay. And everything smelled like tea and fabric softener. Could anyone blame him if he got a crush? Plenty of Padawans had crushes on their masters, and none of them were as amazing as Obi-Wan. Was it really any wonder that when he started thinking about kissing, and maybe more than kissing, he pictured the person he was closest to? The Jedi landed in the pelting rain. Jango waited until they had exited their craft and come into the shelter of the awning to greet them. It was too early for this. Not that he had a comprehensive timeline, but the clones were only 6.
The first batches might look like adults, but most were still a gaggle of limbs.
I am Master Kenobi. I'm here to inspect the army that was ordered for the Jedi, he said, with his hands in his sleeves.
Jango decided to pass the buck, and took him to Nala Se. She, for her part, was not upset to see him, but was upset when he started ordering changes to the carefully scripted timetables. Kenobi ordered a full medical scan, to ensure quality. He watched the trainers at work, asking pointed questions about discipline and free time, and cultural enrichment. He had pointed conversations with the beings in charge, making it clear that any clones that were found to be dysfunctional would absolutely not be reprogrammed or decommissioned. Instead, they were to be sent to the Jedi Order for placement either in the youngling classes or with the Service Corps, or given a stipend if they were above legal age. That same conversation had him walking away with the anti-aging process, delivering it into the hands of the Jedi and a number of colleagues, and practically blackmailing the Kaminoans into giving every clone the treatment as soon as they were past puberty. Jango didn't mean to make the promises that came out of his mouth. He didn't mean to agree that the clones needed a Mandalorian clan name and the things that came with it. Rites of passage, death rites, birthday celebrations, ancestral holidays. At least he wasn't the only one. Somehow Kenobi bullied a number of suppliers to bring in food specifically from Mandalore. He downloaded children's vids from across the galaxy and dumped them onto a server for the cadets to access whenever they wanted. He brought in clothing and hair dye and temporary skin paints. A week after he'd arrived, Kenobi had managed to splash a rainbow of color across everywhere that any of the clones could expect to be found. The Kaminoans hated him and feared him, and they weren't the only ones. Kenobi had to know it was a trap. He'd showed up out of nowhere, saying only that the Force had told him he needed to be there. The chips, the orders, the coming war, he danced around all of it, never actually accusing anyone, and leaving pointed silences where a revelation might break the balance. Jango had heard that some Force users could see the future, but he'd never believed it. Now, he wasn't so sure. Obi-Wan had had a few years to get used to being a Jedi, but nothing could have prepared him for steamrolling through an entire city, overturning every rock he could find, and establishing an entirely new regime in less than a 10-day. There had been limited footage of Topeka City. The films managed to get across the austerity and clinical nature of the place. It was little wonder that the clones didn't know how to be human when they never saw any examples of it. Luckily for them, and himself, it was still early enough in the timeline to fix it. The youngling who stalked him through a dozen corridors on his last day was less of a surprise and more a curiosity. He wasn't one of the alphas. They were the ones who were approaching adult height. But the child was probably from the second or third batch. He was only a little smaller than Anakin and already covered in corded muscle. "Can I help you?" Obi-Wan asked when it became clear that the boy was not going to be satisfied with just seeing him. The child snapped to attention.
"Sir, Cadet 2224.
The introduction itself wasn't a surprise. All the clones had had it drilled into them. But the number... Cody? He was just a kid. He still had baby fat in his cheeks and big round eyes that were trying to figure out the world. In a handful of years, this child would grow up to be one of the most celebrated commanders of the war. This child was one day going to order his men to shoot Obi-Wan down. The kid's eyes lit up.
Cody, that's a name, right? Is that... can it be my name?
Oh, Force...
Of course, if that's what you prefer. He hesitated, instincts warring. A part of him wanted to wrap the boy in his cloak and bring him back to the temple to see if Anakin wanted a friend. Another part of him wanted to start asking questions. Cody blurted out his own questions before he could pick.
Are you really a Jedi? Are you going to stay here and train us? You're not going to just leave and let the Longnecks go back to all the old stuff?
Oh. His heart ached.
Obi-Wan dropped to one knee so he could look Cody in the eye. I can't stay. I have my duties as a Jedi. But you have my word that I will not let the Kaminoans hurt you or any of your brothers. Actually...
He pulled his comm from his belt and took a moment to code it into Cody's bracer.
If you ever need to talk to me directly, now you can.
Cody looked down at his bracer, awe on his face.
Thank you, sir, he whispered.
Thank you for being brave enough to come to me. You're in the commando track, aren't you? Good. Perhaps one day we'll work together.
Cody saluted.
The comm call flickered to life, and Jar Jar recognized the familiar face of Obi-Wan Kenobi. His heart started to race. His eyes tried to look in every direction at once. Had something happened? Had something gone wrong? It was years yet before the Clone Wars were supposed to happen. Was Anakin hurt? Had Palpatine done something? What's happened?
His tongue didn't want to form the words in Basic.
What? Oh, nothing bad.
Obi-Wan waved a hand.
He'd started growing a beard at some point, and it was still rather patchy. I wanted to let you know that I was able to get to Kamino early. The system didn't try to stop me. I think it helps that Anakin was on a mission with some other Padawans. It seems to pay more attention when he's around.
Jar Jar let out a slow breath.
It wasn't bad. Things weren't going to explode before they were ready.
Then his mind processed the implications.
Kamino? You're on a Kamino? The clones, how are they? How is the training? The Alpha Bastards would be, what, six now? They're already teenagers.
He lapsed into Gungan, babbling about the implications. Obi-Wan let him go on for another moment before he cleared his throat. Yes, well... The clones were always a bit of a sore spot in the fandom, so I may have ordered some changes. He tucked his arms into his sleeves and looked down his nose in classic Jedi posture.
What's you do?
Jar Jar asked in a tone halfway between horror and awe. Obi-Wan told him. Jar Jar sat in stunned amazement for a minute before deciding, to hell with it.
You should give them the holonet. Isolation is bomb bad. And maybe talk to Satine? They should need a proper Mandalorian citizenship.
Good idea. I will add it to the list.
As the call ended, Jar Jar remembered the image of that beautiful, stoic, clever man he'd slipped into the edges of his draft. It had been self-indulgent. The perfect man for him. Now, well, that man... probably wouldn't be the same, but he'd have a better life. So, maybe, it was for the best.
Jango saw the comm ID and braced himself before picking up the call. He'd spoken with Count Dooku a dozen times over the past few years. In his opinion, the man was pompous, a know-it-all, and had an ego bigger than a planet. But he paid on time and didn't micromanage, so he was better than some of the people Jango had worked for.
Fett, I have a job for you,
Dooku said without any preliminary.
Jango grunted, going through his mental calendar. He'd had a lot more to do on Kamino since the Jedi had decided to poke their noses into things, but he was still a bounty hunter first and foremost. The targets...
Padme Amidala, the senator for Naboo.
Dooku forwarded a basic set of information, physical attributes, known affiliations, and so on. Jango took his time looking over the information while he carefully planned out his next words. He had been warned about this. Kenobi had made it very clear that he was keeping an eye on certain figures. At some point in the last 2 years, staying on Kenobi's good side had become a matter of survival. Eventually, he shook his head. I can't take this contract. If you'd like, I can give you the name of someone reputable. He didn't elaborate. Dooku didn't need to know his reasons. The Count watched him with a frown etched into his features. Jango got the feeling that if they had been speaking in person, Dooku would have been trying to read his mind.
Are you certain? If it's because of the political nature, I can guarantee a bonus.
No, I've done political assassination before. I'm on another contract.
Dooku relented. Very well. Send me your recommendation. Someone who will be able to work on Coruscant and can handle multiple levels of security.
Jango forwarded the information. He felt like he just dodged a bullet, and he wasn't quite sure why.
Padme stepped onto the landing platform, fear and confidence warring within her. All the signs were there. She knew when attention was on her. She just didn't know if that meant an attack or something more subtle. Passing the controls of her escort ship off to one of the droids, she nodded at Captain Panaka and... A Jedi? Master Adigalia. The Senator did not expect such an honored guest on her arrival. To what do we owe the pleasure? If Padme remembered correctly, Master Galia was both a council member and the Jedi ambassador to the Senate. She was also beautiful, her white head fronds curling over her shoulders, accenting her dark skin. Padme offered a hand, and the Jedi took it, bowing over it without breaking eye contact.
The pleasure is mine, Senator. An old acquaintance of yours, Master Kenobi, requested that I attend. And may I say that it is by far the most enjoyable thing on my list this morning. Padme couldn't help the blush that colored her cheeks, or the way she ducked her head, glancing up through her lashes. Not that she wanted to. And don't think that a little flirting would distract her from the form of a dress Master Galia had used. Sabe was playing decoy at the moment. The senatorial shuttle only just finished its landing sequence.
Addie's expression changed. Before Padme could ask what was wrong, Addie had thrown an arm out, protecting her. Her other hand reached for the ship, clawing at the air, and pulled. The landing ramp was barely halfway down. Sabe, the pilot, and another guard waiting to descend. Their cries of surprise and fear were overridden by an explosion. Padme ducked instinctively, then pushed forward. She caught Sabe, helped her back to her feet. When she faced Addie again, she had her lightsaber out and lit, robes swirling in the wind from below and the smoke from the explosion. Padme bit her lip. Oh, that was...
Is everyone all right? Good. I'm afraid I must insist on accompanying you all to the Chancellor's office. Padme gathered herself, putting away her first response. It would be our pleasure.
You're fidgeting, Obi-Wan said as they stepped into the lift. He wasn't. Not really.
Well, maybe a little. But this was the first time he'd seen Padme in person in years. He desperately wanted to talk to her without a comm. He needed her advice. Badly.
I haven't seen you this flustered since you fell in that nest of Gundarks, Obi-Wan added with a smile.
You were the one who fell in, teacher. If I remember right, I had to rescue you.
Obi-Wan had lost his cloak in that misadventure. Then the Gundark slime had eaten through his outer tunic, leaving him bare-chested as Anakin pulled him over his shoulder and hauled them both back to their ship. That had been a hard mission. For more than one reason.
Oh, yes. Obi-Wan nodded. That little smile on his face?
You'll be fine.
Fine? Yeah,
He knew he'd be fine. Why would he not be fine? It was Padme. Obi-Wan put a hand on his shoulder, warm and steady and confident. Then the lift doors slid open, and they both had to be professional. The mood was spoiled slightly when Jar Jar, Junior Senator Binks, stumbled out in front of them.
Master Kenobi! Miss is so glad you is here! And Annie! You're so big! Come, come, welcome!
He clutched Anakin's hands, shaking firmly before pulling him into the other room. Anakin heard his teacher step to one side, gesturing for Jar Jar to be quiet. Then, there she was. Padme.
Annie? Is that really you? I didn't realize. You've grown.
You have too. Slag, that didn't sound right. More beautiful?
Why had that come out as a question? And why did he have to fall over his words with Obi-Wan watching so closely?
He cleared his throat. I'm glad that Master Galia was able to protect you and Sabe. Padme relaxed.
Yes, I owe her so much. Sabe would be dead if she weren't there. And you sent her, did you not, Master Kenobi?
Obi-Wan finally stepped forward.
Obi-Wan, no need to stand on ceremony amongst old friends.
One simple gesture had them moving further into the room, taking seats and relaxing even further.
Teacher Obi-Wan always knew the right thing to do.
Now, I'm afraid that Master Galia has other duties, but it is clear that you need protection.
We'll find who attacked you, Anakin assured. Obi-Wan tipped his head. He had that look, the one where he was secretly amused, but he had to say something for appearance's sake.
Now, Anakin, our top priority has to be the Senator's safety.
Anakin ducked his head. He could feel the blush creeping over his ears. This was why he needed to talk to Padme. Obi-Wan was his teacher, the person he'd known the longest, and somehow he'd always managed to put his foot in his mouth.
Yes, teacher, he mumbled.
Obi-Wan stood.
Good. Now, perhaps Jar Jar could show me around and help familiarize me with your security? Anakin, you wouldn't mind staying here with Padme?
He shook his head. Yes, Master.
Then I will leave you to it.
For some reason, Obi-Wan sounded almost gleeful. There were some things Anakin would never understand. Obi-Wan fixed Jar Jar with a look, and they both slipped into the other room. Anakin turned back to Padme and asked,
You're really all right?
At the same time, Padme said,
Are you okay?
Their eyes met, and a minute later, they were both giggling.
It's really good to see you, Anakin said when he had mastered himself again.
I have so much I want to talk to you about.
Me too.
Padme managed to catch the yawn behind a hand.
Oh, but in the morning, it's been a very long day.
Yeah, of course. I'll just keep an eye on things. Anakin fidgeted until Padme circled the small table and pulled him into a hug.
It really is good to see you. Whatever you're worried about, I'm sure we can work it out once I'm over this hyperspace lag.
Thanks.
Anakin nodded. Padme was a good friend.
That thought was still drifting around him when Anakin felt the disturbance. A hint of malice in the Force. The sense of exhaust. The noise of the traffic rose. Anakin moved, pushing through the door to Padme's room with his lightsaber in hand. The next hour was a maze of Force impressions and instinct. When he finally ran the bounty hunter down, Obi-Wan was there to witness his victory. They cuffed the unconscious attacker, and Obi-Wan pulled him into a hug, ruffling his hair with praise on his lips. Padme was a wonderful friend. But he knew who his heart belonged to. He just needed to figure out the right time, the right way to say it. The Senate was both everything Padme had expected, and nothing like what she had expected. There were certainly upsides. She was working for the benefit of the whole galaxy, not just one planet. And there were others who genuinely wanted to help stand beside her. Master Adi had made sure she was settling in quite well, and introduced her to a few other Jedi. Shakti, Deepa, and most recently, Ayla had welcomed her to the planet with all the hospitality she could have asked for, and more. Even the actual work wasn't as bad as she had feared. Sheev had certainly told her often enough how things could get tied up in committees or the courts. It helped that she had her handmaidens and Jar Jar. Jar Jar may have only been the junior senator. He might stumble over his words and act like a nervous wreck any time he had to practice a speech. Not during the speech, just the build-up. He might go out of his way to avoid being in the same room as Chancellor Palpatine. Which was fair. There was a lot of prejudice against the Gungans in the older population of Naboo. And yet, even with all that, he managed to speak to the right person at the right time again and again. One comment about a family member or a question about where they had last vacationed, and suddenly adversaries would be amenable to come to the table. She saw what he was doing. She knew blackmail and bribery when she saw it. But it never went too far. And honestly, the fact that he was willing to do it at all could be beneficial. The two of them were getting a bit of a reputation. Padme was the one you spoke to if you were upfront and honest and actually willing to do your job. If you failed to do your job, then you would end up speaking to an 8-foot-tall alien with eyes that could follow you wherever you went and hands large enough to wrap all the way around your throat. Not that Jar Jar was capable of carrying out that threat. No, outside the Senate, where violence was actually called for, their dynamic reversed. She was the hidden blaster that slipped past the shields, and he was the large and clumsy senator who had no idea how to exist outside his sphere. They made a lovely match. Maybe that was why Padme was so willing to trust him, to leave him back on Coruscant while she slipped into the Outer Rim. She trusted him. Later, when she got word that the Galactic Senate had approved a military force, she didn't understand what had happened. 3 days. 3 days enjoying the peace and serenity of the lake country on Naboo. Padme knew plenty of people who would have considered it ideal. She'd spent the time laying in the grass, eating tiny pastries and cheeses, and talking with an old friend who she genuinely did want to reconnect with. Assuming that Anakin could talk about anything other than his master. Then he gave me his cloak and hugged me and pet my hair. Is it weird that I like it when he pets my hair? I know he thinks of me as a kid. He probably still sees me as 14 and tripping over my own feet. Anakin, have you told him you like him? It was her last appeal. Her last attempt at civility. Her expression hid exasperation and annoyance behind a glazed, neutral mask. I've tried. Well, maybe not in those words. But it doesn't matter. He doesn't even seem to notice. He sighed with all the feeling in his overdramatic heart. Her mask broke. Anakin, you know I care about you, but I can't do this. If the only thing we're going to talk about is our crushes, can we at least talk about mine as well? Anakin's eyes widened briefly, then his expression turned skeptical. You like Obi-Wan? Heavens no! I mean, I'm sure he's wonderful, and I wish you both the best, but he's not for me. I was thinking about Master T and Master Sakura. They're both just so... She let out a sigh. Anakin leaned back on his hands, looking up at the sky as he nodded thoughtfully. Yeah, I guess I can see where you're coming from. Obi-Wan and Master T spar sometimes. It's amazing. Padme's heart fluttered in her chest at the thought. Tell me all about it.
Jango hadn't taken the contract. There was no intermediary, no link to Kamino. Well, that was fine. Obi-Wan knew where he needed to go. Geonosis eventually, but first, Tatooine. He'd never managed to work out the exact timeline, but if he could protect Shmi...
Warning! Key plot point imminent. Tusken Massacre. Failure to enact key plot point will result in a loss of plot points and expulsion from the designated world.
Obi-Wan stopped in the middle of the corridor, a mouse droid buzzing as it had to swerve around him. Not good.
He'd bumped into a few plot points during Anakin's training, but nothing that the system had labeled a key plot point. He'd suspected that the system would start speaking up again now that things were happening, but the threat of death was a bit more than he'd predicted. So, apparently, he couldn't rescue Shmi before she was tortured. He couldn't stop Anakin from going after her or massacring the camp. That didn't mean he was going to just throw up his hands and let things be. He didn't know exactly when things would happen, but he wasn't going to just let it go. The comm from Anakin came 3 nights after he'd been scheduled to arrive on Naboo.
Teacher, I'm... His voice cracked, and Obi-Wan couldn't help but reach out through the Force. His Padawan was parsecs away, but maybe he could still feel it.
Anakin, I'm here. Tell me what's wrong.
Anakin swallowed, his voice rough.
I've been dreaming. About Mom. I can't reach her on the comms. Teacher, I'm scared.
I understand, Anakin. The Force can often communicate through dreams. You need to keep Padme safe, but perhaps, if she is willing to come along, you could take a small trip to Tatooine. It's not far, as these things go.
Anakin made a sound and bit his lip.
Do you think it would be okay?
Obi-Wan nodded. You talked to me first, and you will keep Padme safe. I'm even in the area. I could meet you there. And then no one on the council should have a problem with it.
Anakin nodded and dragged a hand across his eyes.
Thank you, teacher. Then I'll see you soon?
Yes, Padawan. I will see you soon.
After that, there was nothing for it. He landed his ship outside the Larm's homestead half a cycle before Anakin arrived. The system wouldn't stop flashing warnings at him. It was clear he was towing very close to the line. The Lars family told him what happened, and Obi-Wan didn't wait for Anakin's arrival to head off into the desert. Watching his Padawan find the camp, and his dying mother from behind a dune, Obi-Wan's shields pulled up as high as he could get them, was possibly the worst thing he'd ever had to experience. Knowing the war was about to start only made him grit his teeth. It was only going to get worse from here. As soon as Obi-Wan felt Shmi's life fade, he leapt forward. Anakin was out of the tent, lightsaber glowing in the night, but for once he wasn't who Obi-Wan was focused on. He'd come prepared. Bacta and adrenaline and a resuscitation kit. A transfusion kit to replace the blood she'd lost. Shmi was going to get every chance he could give her. And if there was death on the other side of a thin layer of cloth, so be it. It was touch and go. The system glared warnings at him and took away points, but Obi-Wan ignored it, shoving it into a box with the rest of his frustrations. At some point, Anakin realized he was there and stopped killing things to come help. It was enough. Barely, but enough. They had to calm Padme to bring over one of the ships, to transport Shmi back to the homestead. She was stable, for the moment, but she'd need months of care if she was ever going to live without treatment again. When they told the rest of the family, Anakin shut down, leaving Obi-Wan to outline what had happened.
R2 and C-3PO were tasked with taking Shmi to Naboo, where she could be properly hospitalized. In the back of his mind, Obi-Wan checked another thing off his list. No need to worry about the droids in the upcoming battle. Anakin broke into his thoughts by wrapping his arms around him.
Teacher, I killed them. I was so angry. I couldn't even help her. If you hadn't been there...
He buried his face in Obi-Wan's neck, and Obi-Wan hugged him close. He knew it should have been Padme, but he would never deny Anakin comfort. I know, Anakin. I know. There wasn't anything else to say. The message had come back from Obi-Wan. The war was starting. Jar Jar stood in the Naboo pod and wished that Padme was there to hide behind. Not that that was possible. He knew more than most about what was happening, even now on Geonosis. The droids, the clones. Obi-Wan had managed to change some things, but some events were written in stone. The system was trying to force him into one such point even now. Of all the characters, why did he have to end up reborn as Jar Jar? A 7th pop-up appeared in his vision, warning that if he didn't propose, the Chancellor, a Sith Lord, be given emergency powers, then he would lose more points than he'd ever managed to earn. His choices were to either go through with it, or to drop dead and possibly crash the whole of the universe with him. He couldn't do that to his precious protagonist's son. He didn't want to die. Jar Jar hadn't been a coward when he'd first written him. The producers and the fact that his computer had crashed 2 days before the deadline and he'd lost everything were responsible for that mess. But Jar Jar had never been a hero, never courageous. A new pop-up appeared, flashing red and yellow right in front of his face. He knew no one else could see it, but that didn't stop him from flinching and glancing around. He didn't have a choice. He knew that much. He toggled the switch to send the pod forward. He had to do this, but... But he'd come too far to completely play by the system's rules. Jar Jar raised his hands and projected his voice, proposing emergency powers be granted to the Supreme Chancellor. With conditions. It was a shame Obi-Wan hadn't had a chance to talk with Dooku. He'd reached out a few times over the years, ostensibly to reconnect with his Grand Master, but Dooku had never been all that forthcoming. Of course, Obi-Wan already knew who the Sith Lord was. He didn't need nebulous hints about a Sith in the Senate and the coming darkness. He'd been training Darth Vader for the past 10 years. But Yoda had yet to believe that he was having visions of a dark future and war on the horizon. He needed proof. So, yes, the detour to Tatooine had absolutely been necessary. He did not regret it in the least. And yet... He was yanked forward out of his thoughts. Qui-Gon's advice to stay in the here and now was more relevant than he'd known. Anakin was beside him, Padme on his other side. At least being in the here and now meant he got to see this. No matter how it was criticized by some, Obi-Wan knew that the romance between Anakin and Padme was the stuff legends were made of. And he would get to see the heartfelt edge-of-death confession that would literally tear a galaxy apart. In the wider arena, Geonosians were cheering. Dooku was speaking to Jango Fett. He was chained to a post, arms above his head, as the three monstrous beasts were led into the open. He knew he should be working to get his cuffs off, or at the very least making a snide comment or two. Padme had gotten a few pins out of her hair. Anakin was biting his lip, looking at a point about a meter in front of his feet. "Teacher Obi-Wan." Anakin's voice was choppy. It caught in his throat. Anakin didn't call him teacher all that often anymore.
not since his teenage years, where the other Padawans had poked at him for using the word teacher instead of master. Obi-Wan glanced to Padme again. Was there something off? Yes, she had stepped aside on Tatooine, giving Anakin space rather than comforting him. But they'd also had their romantic getaway on Naboo. Surely things couldn't be that far off the rails. Anakin looked at him, desperation, fear, and hope all warring in his expression.
Teacher, in case we die here, if something happens, I need you to know.
We're not going to die here, Obi-Wan said. Focus on getting free. Padme's got the right idea. He jerked his chin at her, hoping to redirect Anakin's attention and get them back on script.
But if we do, I need you to know. I love you.
What? They couldn't have gotten that far off track. No, Anakin would have his moment with Padme after the battle, taking her back to Naboo, and everything would be fine. He didn't get any more time to think about it because a giant praying mantis creature tried to eat him. Even though he'd been training for this for the past 10 years, the following fight was a royal clusterfuck. Trying to stay alive, trying to keep the other Jedi alive, trying to keep Mace from cutting off Jango's head, chasing down Dooku, making sure there was a medic among the clones so that Anakin would have immediate treatment when his hand was cut off. At some point in there, he'd gotten a system message about the plot and negative MC points, which he'd rolled his eyes at. He'd already lost a score of points that day. A few more weren't going to kill him. He'd done his best to keep the plot online, okay? It was a shame he hadn't gotten to see the confession of love, but by the time he fell into his bed that night, he didn't have the energy to spare to think about it. Cheng Qing-Qiu carefully slipped away from Anakin and Padme and the other young senators in the group, caught Jar Jar's arm, and forcefully guided them into a private comm chamber. After 10 years, he well knew that nowhere in the Senate was private, but comm chambers were at least shielded from outside interference, and they had a decent enough setup for what he needed. Jar Jar fidgeted before finally sitting in one of the chairs that were adjusted for his height.
So this, could be worse, yeah?
Cheng Qing-Qiu gave him a pointed look as he took his own seat. It could also be better. I was trying to get to Tatooine before Anakin, so he wouldn't have a chance to do anything. But the system locked down on me. I take it something similar happened to you in the Senate? Jar Jar nodded. He let out a hissing breath through his gills.
Pushing and pushing, and it's not like Miso wanted to die. I did add things we can use, but he knows it. I saw the way he was a-looking at me. Any more for a while, and I'm a-gonna end up on a knife.
Obi-Wan reached out and felt for the comforting presence of the Force. It was there, like it always was. A song from his childhood, and a cool breeze, and a soft blanket all in one. Right now, it was quiet and listening, like a cat curled up nearby. Both the Force and the system didn't seem to have a problem with them plotting as long as it was done behind closed doors. That's fine. The next few weeks, months, really, will be chaotic. I can keep his attention. After all, I have to establish myself as the negotiator, and Anakin as the hero with no fear. You could probably take some time on Naboo if it gets too hot. What does Padme think of things?
She's angry. She's wanted to do something about it. That's all on track.
I had to prod Anakin into taking her back to Naboo. He paused, thinking about Geonosis. Surely it was just a small deviation. Everything else had fallen into place. She didn't say anything about it.
She wouldn't.
Jar Jar lifted his hands and shrugged. True, it is a secret, after all. Obi-Wan set that problem aside and refocused on the present.
Running a hand across the comm console, he pulled up the settings he wanted. A quick test of the security, and he connected to a private server. This is everything I can remember about the Clone Wars, sorted by media and where I think they fall in the timeline. 3 years isn't long enough for everything here to happen. Some of this can't be canon. But what's that look? He narrowed his eyes at Jar Jar.
Well, see...
Something else from that missing first draft? Jar Jar nodded sheepishly.
Misa first draft was for maybe 6 years? It was thematic! 6 years and then Order 66, but then the producer says I was too long and actors wouldn't look right, and I couldn't remember all the details anyway, so it was changed.
Sheng Quin Q rubbed at his temples. He reached for the Force, let go of the frustration, and finally made a note in his files. That changes things, but I'd still like you to go through what I have here and help me put it in order. The timeline is a mess, particularly the comics and the novelizations never set down a firm date, because it might mess up something else. I want to keep casualties to a minimum. If I have to lose all my troops, then I want to bring in as few as possible. Jar Jar's expression hardened. He nodded. Despite the knowledge of who the man was, despite the fumbling and imperfect basic, Sheng Quin Q was very aware in that moment that Jar Jar wasn't human, and humans weren't necessarily the strongest or fastest beings around. Chang Qingha startled when the message came in. He was a senator. Hells, he wasn't even human, and yet he somehow managed to drift off and forget himself while trying to remember those little plot details. In all honesty, the political intrigue wasn't his best writing. It wasn't the genre he preferred. But the world-building demanded a certain amount of structure. In some ways, the Empire had been easier to... Would be easier to... What was the tense for a situation where something he had written in another life in the past was taking place in the future? The message blinked at him, and he rolled his ears back. Daydreaming could only keep him from his duty for so long. It wouldn't be long now before Order 66. Less than a year, if the timeline held. His poor son. His star of a protagonist. Writers always talked about killing their darlings and torturing their characters, but now he really wished he'd given Anakin more of an out. The door slid open, revealing a clone in Coruscant Guard red. Fox. Commander Fox himself. He knew those markings. He knew all the markings. Ah, apologies, Senator. You didn't answer the comm. Fox straightened and fell into a military stance.
Oh, me? No, I busy, sorry.
He grinned and felt like facepalming. It wasn't his fault that he'd been transmigrated in as an infant and had to learn the language the hard way. It wasn't his fault that Gungan was still his first language and Basic was a distant second. And overall, it wasn't his fault that the producers had taken a character that was meant to illustrate how good intentions could be twisted, and the path that Anakin could have walked if he'd stayed on Naboo, and turned him into a comic relief character. His eye stalks twitched. He couldn't help it. Gungans had evolved as a prey species. Some of that paranoia was bound to carry over. Commander Fox waited a minute longer before clearing his throat.
Well, then, if you're ready. I've come to escort you to your meeting with the Aquatical Party.
Good, yes! Misa almost ready.
He lifted a hand, knocked over his cup, and ended up dabbing at the linen of his sleeve. It was no longer a soft green.
Since we're still here...
Fox nodded at the bathroom. Jar Jar managed not to say anything incriminating as he slipped away and shut the door. The single good thing about his situation was that Gungans couldn't blush.
Their eyes met across the crowded room. Ayla curled her leku. Quinlan was such an ass. He'd arranged the meeting for her to get information from a source in the Senate, but he hadn't told her who her contact would be, just that they had to pretend to be lovers, flirting and drinking, and eventually, after they had enough of a cover, retreat upstairs to the private rooms. It would be odd if either of them was seen to leave before dawn. She crossed the room, slipping into the booth beside Padme, tucking her arm into the other woman's and leaning in to whisper the code in her ear. Tonight would likely be torture. Then Padme leaned up, kissing along her neck until she whispered the response against Ayla's jaw. She shivered, and Padme's pupils dilated as she bit her lip. Well, that was interesting. Empathy wasn't Ayla's specialty, but she was sensitive enough to notice when someone was right there, touching her leku and actively interested. Maybe tonight wouldn't be such torture after all. Maybe these meetings would need to turn into frequent events, just to be sure they had all the information. And maybe she was getting ahead of herself, Ayla thought, as a serving droid rolled up to offer them drinks. Padme's hand slid a little higher on her thigh. It was going to be an interesting evening.
Fox stepped to the side of the hallway, falling into parade rest. The senators who passed him didn't even seem to notice. They hadn't even changed their pace. Honestly, he wasn't surprised. Most of the senators were like that. Not all, but most. And since he and his men were considered to be less than sentient, he was expected to get out of their way. At this rate, it would take him another 20 minutes just to get across the building. It was a good thing Senator Binks was the way he was. Anyone else and Fox might get a reprimand, maybe even a mark on his record. But Senator Binks would nod to him, probably offer a small smile, and then fumble with his robes for another 5 minutes before they got going. Frankly, if it wasn't for Chancellor Palpatine, and maybe Organa, Fox would have said the only good senators came from Naboo. Both of them actually managed to get shit done. Everyone recognized Padme for it. She was big and flashy and wouldn't take no for an answer. Binks might not have been eager to throw himself into firefights or barter with Outer Rim crime lords, but he knew who to talk to. As clumsy and awkward as he looked, Binks seemed to have blackmail on half the Senate, and he knew exactly what the other half wanted. If you wanted something to happen, it might take a dozen committee meetings and more legal talk verbiage than were in your average lawyer's vocabulary. But it would actually happen. Miracle of miracles. Yeah, Binks was a good one. It might be his job to protect the other senators, but he actually wanted to protect Binks. Especially from... Fox ducked into the service lift and sent a message from his HUD that he was on his way. Obi-Wan saw Padme, gave Anakin a look, and pointedly turned away to talk to Cody. It was so frustrating. If Anakin wasn't absolutely certain that Cody wasn't interested, he would have been jealous. Then Padme grabbed his arm and tugged him behind one of the pillars. It wasn't exactly private, but it was about as private as they were going to get without finding a broom closet, which... No. He liked Padme just fine, but not like that. I need to talk to you. She had her serious face on.
Okay.
He nodded. Padme bit her lip, squished her face up, and said,
I'm pregnant.
What? I thought... Congratulations?
Ayla doesn't know.
Anakin nodded, the wheels in his brain finally starting to spin.
So, the other parent is Ayla?
I thought... Okay, genetics and reproduction were never really my thing, but...
No, I didn't think so either. We confirmed that we couldn't give each other anything bad because of the genetic difference, so we weren't using protection. But I never thought...
Anakin ran a hand through his hair.
Do Twi'leks even have the right... anatomy?
Padme blushed. Then she hit him on the arm.
For your information, they can switch depending on circumstances. The point is that Ayla doesn't know, and I don't know how to tell her.
Well, don't do it when you're chained to a post or under fire. She hit his arm again.
Just because Obi-Wan never answered your confession 4 times, Padme. I've tried to confess 4 times. Even sitting down to a nice dinner. He just looked at me and thanked me and asked me if there was anything the council needed to know. The council! Like we were being watched or something.
Wasn't that dinner interrupted?
Yeah, but that's not the point. The Chancellor helped me get reservations and everything.
Padme raised an eyebrow and gestured to herself.
She wasn't far enough in to show yet, but he got the point.
Okay. Ayla. I think she's due back on planet in a few weeks?
Obi-Wan hadn't been sleeping. He'd long ago learned the trick of reducing his sleep through meditation, and with the war in its second year, he'd been using it near constantly. So when Anakin slipped into his rooms sometime before midnight, Obi-Wan just tipped his head in question, put aside his paperwork, and motioned for Anakin to join him on the couch.
Teacher, Obi-Wan caught Anakin's hand. If he was using that old name, it was serious.
What is it? What's wrong, Anakin?
He kept his voice low and calm. The system was buzzing in the back of his head, but it did that every time he was in the same room as Anakin. It didn't necessarily mean anything.
Anakin squeezed his hand, leaning in.
I've been having dreams, he admitted in a small, scratchy voice.
Ah, finally.
Obi-Wan nodded slowly. They'd gone through this before with his mother. If the pattern stayed true...
He prodded at the place he imagined the system to be.
Plot point discovered. Dreams of the Chosen. Anakin is worried about his dreams. The fate of the hero and the galaxy could hang in the balance. Please continue to do your best.
There it was. Not quite as elaborate as he'd expected, and no limitation about what he could do or say. All the better.
Obi-Wan tugged Anakin close, hugging him and giving in to the urge to stroke his hair. It had soothed Anakin since he was a child, and he certainly needed it now.
It's all right. You're safe. Padme's safe. We'll get her the best doctors we can find.
Anakin had slumped into his hold, but he looked up at that.
Padme? You know she's pregnant? How?
The Force. He waved it off. After so many years, he'd given up on his "the Force doesn't work that way" anger. It was too good of an excuse not to use, and in any case, some Jedi could tell if a person was pregnant using the Force. It wasn't a common gift, and he didn't have it, but that didn't matter.
Anakin was shaking his head. I am worried about her, but
that's not what I've been dreaming about. Teacher, you're going to die. I see you falling, and figures shooting you, and I can't... The Chancellor told me about a ritual that the Sith knew, a way to keep people alive.
Hush, Anakin. It's all right.
Obi-Wan stroked his hair some more. Odd that it was him rather than Padme, but it didn't really matter. The problem was the fear behind the dreams, and he'd been working on an argument for that since before he'd been thrust into this world. The Sith cannot stop death.
Even their most powerful rituals could only keep the body alive, not the spirit. The Jedi know that we become one with the Force after death, with certain exceptions. Every Force tradition has faced this question. The witches of Dathomir would hang their dead in trees, so they can animate them when needed. The Barrando sages give their dead to the water, so that they may rejoin the flow of energy of the galaxy. Only those who know themselves and are at peace with their place and their purpose can become Force ghosts and speak to the living. Anakin's expression shifted, a bit of hope appearing in his eyes.
Force ghosts?
Obi-Wan nodded and willingly told Anakin everything he knew from two trilogies, dozens of books, and all the research he'd done since he came over. It was nearly morning by the time Anakin slipped into the hall, muttering to himself, "We'll be together forever." Obi-Wan chalked it up to sleep loss and forgot it entirely when he got a new system message. Protagonist satisfaction points plus 250. Series plot points plus 100. Please continue to do your best. The Supreme Chancellor had been kidnapped. Count Dooku waited in his flagship in high orbit over Coruscant. It was an important mission, important enough that they sent the best. The hero with no fear and the negotiator. Anakin cut his way through the lower levels of the ship, Obi-Wan a step behind, covering his back. He got used to fighting droids, used to the way he couldn't sense them in the Force, relying on his hearing instead. Obi-Wan was his perfect match, covering every opening, grace and power, wit and instinct. "Up," the Force whispered, and he let it guide him. The Chancellor, bound to his chair, ruffled but still dignified. Anakin knew the man distantly, but Obi-Wan had always warned him away from getting too involved with politics. Padme and Jar Jar were seemingly the only exceptions to that rule. Still, he knew enough to be polite and bow his head, even as he kept his attention on Dooku.
"Your swords, please. We wouldn't want to make a mess in front of the Chancellor."
"Wouldn't we?" Obi-Wan asked.
"This time we'll do it together," Anakin whispered, as he stepped to the side, giving Obi-Wan room to move. Instead of agreeing, Obi-Wan lifted a hand and motioned Anakin back.
"You were going to kill Chancellor Palpatine?"
The Count tipped his head.
"He is a better bargaining chip alive, but now that you are here, I have no choice."
Obi-Wan hummed, looking around the space. It had once been a command station, but the whole vessel had been repurposed to run off AI.
"Throw down your weapons, and I'll make your deaths painless," Dooku said, stepping forward.
Anakin bent his knees, waiting for Obi-Wan's signal, but his teacher seemed to be working off a different script.
"There aren't any other people on this ship, are there? Only droids."
"Far more efficient than the beings you enslaved."
Dooku ignited his saber, holding it in front of him, where one motion could either block his center or strike the Chancellor. Obi-Wan hummed again.
"Go ahead. Kill him."
Was Obi-Wan bluffing? Anakin couldn't tell. He had to be. But Anakin knew his teacher, and Obi-Wan's eyes weren't right for that.
"Master?" Anakin asked.
Obi-Wan tilted his head and squinted out the viewport, nodding to himself.
"We'll be going now. You can do as you please. Anakin."
He gestured for Anakin to follow him, and out of habit, Anakin fell into step.
"Kenobi, I will kill him," Dooku called.
Obi-Wan just raised a hand, acknowledging him without turning around. A second later, the ship shook, falling towards the planet. They ran into Grievous on the way out, so at least the trip wasn't completely wasted. Jar Jar was moving on autopilot. The Chancellor was dead. Palpatine was dead. Sidious
the Dark Lord of the Sith, the character who was the pivotal force and opposition for his entire life's work, was dead. They hadn't even made it into episode 3. There was so much left, so much of his original masterpiece to unfold and reveal. Not that the future empire was something he actually wanted to live through, but he couldn't help the longing for something that would never come to pass. Jar Jar waved, accepting the post of Vice Chancellor under Bail Organa, because that was how far things had gone off the rails. He made a speech and used his new power to push through this stonewalled clone rights bill. Then, when questions had been answered and there had been applause and speculation about the future, and after Bail had given another speech, he'd finally been allowed to retreat to the quiet solitude of his new office. Well, solitude except for a familiar figure in red-trimmed armor, who stopped just inside the door. Jar Jar flailed. It was what was expected by this point. He ended up in a chair, which was probably for the best. Commander Fox, was there... Did you need... Fox slowly moved to take off his helmet. There weren't any tattoos, and his hair was in a standard cut. He might have been any shiny, fresh from Kamino, which was the point. Once upon a time, there had been a half dozen subplots featuring Fox slipping into and out of trouble, gathering intel and pulling strings from the shadows. All the clones were smart, but he was clever. All the clones were strong, but he was precise. All the clones were creative, but Fox put them to shame. And Fox was walking forward, standing over him. "Sir," Fox said in a low, throaty voice that did things to Jar Jar's insides. He telegraphed his movements, slowly cupping the back of Jar Jar's neck, pulling him in until their foreheads touched. A Keldape kiss. "You've done so much for us. For my brothers. For me. You hide it. But I see." He guided Jar Jar's head with a light touch and finally leaned in to press their mouths together. Jar Jar didn't know what to do with his hands. At least Fox was already used to his flailing. "Too fast?" Fox asked. "No, I..." He couldn't think in basic. Couldn't find the words, but he managed to lean in and wrap his hands around Fox's hips. Reddit would explode if they ever found out about this. Pain. So much pain. All the best medicine money could buy, and childbirth was still this painful? Sith hells! Padme made a mental note to advocate for proper women's health if she survived this. She squeezed Ayla's hand a little tighter. At her shoulder, Shock pushed back her hair and placed a kiss on her forehead. "You're doing so well, Padme. Almost there." Master Healer Che nodded. "Here comes the first one. Breathe." Padme's body clamped down. She sucked in a breath and pushed it out in a scream along with her daughter. 2 hours later, with both her children in her arms, she decided she was willing to forgive Ayla. She also decided that someone else could carry any future children. She was done with it. Children. War orphans and child-sized clones alike rested in the large room. The lights had been turned down and most of them were asleep, if fitfully. Anakin stood by the door, watching Obi-Wan make his way between the rows of cots and cribs. Occasionally he'd reach out, brush aside some hair, and with a light touch send comfort, love, and calm into the dreamer. Obi-Wan didn't have to be here. It wasn't his duty. He wasn't a healer or a caretaker for any of the youngling groups. But here he was,
offering the same open adoration to these infants as he had to Anakin all those years ago, when he'd just been a frightened kid. Anakin stepped into the room, finding Obi-Wan's hand without thought. The words slipped into the quiet of the room like a sigh. I love you. He'd said it before. He'd said it when they both nearly died, when they were drowning in paperwork and Obi-Wan called a halt for the night. He'd said it in a thousand little ways every day. You as well, my Padawan. This time, Anakin really did sigh, his shoulders slumping. He let go of Obi-Wan's hand and instead reached into the crib beside them. A little boy, possibly one of the clones, had rolled away from his stuffed Tuka. Anakin tucked it in beside him. But not like I love you. He'd accepted it. After 3 years, he'd accepted that Obi-Wan wasn't going to love him like he wanted. His master would never acknowledge him as a romantic partner. Close as family, but never more. At least it was better than not having Obi-Wan in his life at all. Anakin? Obi-Wan kept his voice soft, his head tilted in concern or question. I love you, but... Anakin took a breath, careful not to raise his voice. You'll call me your Padawan. You'll call me your partner. You say you trust me with your life, but you don't love me. Not romantically. I get it. I still love you. Anakin, I... Padme? Is my best friend other than you, and I hope she and Ayla are very happy together. He must have looked like a kicked puppy because Obi-Wan reached out, turned him so they were facing each other, and folded Anakin's hands in his. Anakin, you're my brother. I care about you deeply. They'd had this conversation before, too. Every time Obi-Wan said he was his brother, and they could talk about anything he was concerned about. Every time Anakin tried to push, Obi-Wan would redirect or say something about the Force, and it wasn't like they'd had a lot of free time in these last few years. Anakin squeezed Obi-Wan's hands, breathing out the frustration and desperation until only his love and admiration remained. I love you, Anakin said again. I want to be with you. I want to kiss you. I want to leave the Order with you, go to Naboo or Tatooine. I want to start a new temple and do things the way you always said they should be done, or pilot a ship around the Outer Rim, just helping anyone who needed it. I want to whisk these children away to a place nothing bad would ever find them and watch you hold them and teach them. I want so much. I want all of you. I want you in my life and in my bed. I want things that I know I shouldn't want. You don't have to love me back. I know you don't love me like I love you. I'll take whatever you give me. Anakin. The room wasn't really silent. There were nearly 40 young presences breathing and rolling over in their sleep. Anakin met Obi-Wan's eyes, pleading with him to understand, to not dodge away or redirect. Not now. Not after everything that they'd been through. I love you too, Anakin. I thought... Obi-Wan shook his head and squeezed Anakin's hands. It doesn't matter. Things are different now. They will be different. You really want to spend the rest of your life with me? After everything? Yes, because of everything. Anakin cupped the sides of Obi-Wan's face, and his teacher leaned into his metal hand. I never thought. Yeah,
you're kind of dumb when it comes to the emotional stuff, Master.
Obi-Wan rolled his eyes. Anakin wasn't sure if Obi-Wan kissed him or if it was the other way around. It didn't really matter. He finally felt like his universe was turning properly. Like he was right where he was supposed to be. The Force singing around him. He wasn't even thrown off when Obi-Wan broke the kiss to curse under his breath about some system or other.
Mace Windu cursed under his breath as yet another shatter point lit up his senses. He'd had a migraine for days, with all the changes that were happening in and around the temple. He covered his eyes and cursed Kenobi and Skywalker both. Maybe when they both left the Order, he'd have some peace.
The end.